With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Celtic Down Under podcast. I'm your host, Jared, and tonight I'm joined by Sean. How are you going, Sean?
Yeah, all right. Got my COVID booster yesterday, so I feel like I've got knives in my armpits right now. But here I am, sucking it up, unlike John, who pulled a sickie.
Oh, geez, here we go. Fighting words. Fight.
Sorry, he's just soft. It's fine.
I'm staying out of this one. I'll let you two have your unique car park now a bit later once you eventually make up for it. But yeah, John, I hope you're all right, mate, with that. Liam, busy man tonight because he's over in Japan with their outbreak and everything. So he'll be back. They'll both be back with us next week when we do our preview podcast going into the Glasgow Derby. So yep, me and Sean tonight. This could go anywhere. So it could be over in 25 minutes, could be an hour and a half. Who knows? We'll crack on into it. So I'll just do the usual shout out straight away. So last week we had a lot of people tuning in on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed and you liked what we do, please subscribe to the Celtic Down Under YouTube channel. Also, if you're listening to this in podcast format, then please subscribe to Celtic Down Under podcast as well via your podcast app. We'd really appreciate that. So there's been two games since our last podcast, Sean. There was Celtic 2, Alloa Athletic 1 in the Scottish Cup. I don't think we need to go into too much depth on this. Everything's been said on other podcasts in the media and everything. But bit of a, I think it was, there's two or three main touch points. Key things for me are Cal McGregor's broken cheekbone, the refereeing, and, you know, how physical Alloa Athletic were, which was to be expected. They never had the playing quality to play us off the pitch. So I expected them to go out and they couldn't win the game, try to win the fight. What was your take on the game?
Yeah, I mean, I said last week I wanted to see wholesale change and that almost happened. What I would have liked was basically every backup player plus Rogic and Maeda, who were about to get on an airplane so they can play as well. So the one exception really to that was Callum McGregor, and he was the one who got the most severe injury. So that was a bit disappointing that the worst case scenario that we were hoping to avoid did eventuate. Pitch was shite, made for a shite game. I thought the Axon boys gave Giakoumakis a bit of a hard time. They actually they got called out a bit for it and they were defending themselves. But I think the reason why it seemed like they were being more harsh on Giakoumakis was that they were kind of literally talking about him in the same sentence as Barkas and Bolingoli and Ayeti. So they were really not...
association there, Sean.
Yeah, they were barely taking a breath between talking about those players. So they kind of got it tight for that one. But I actually thought he had a good first half, and especially for someone that's barely kicked a ball for the last 6 months, you know, like that was what he needed. He needed some minutes in the legs. His movement for the goal was good. If you look at it again at the replay, he started to move before Liam Scales has hit the ball. So he's anticipating it. And Scales has obviously put a great ball in. It was very Tosh McKinley and Larson-esque. I know people hate when you bring up Larson comparisons, but like, I guess the Tosh McKinley comparison,
nobody's going to have a problem with. Sutton or Hartson-esque for me. That's what I saw in terms of the movement and the physical presence more than a Larson type.
Yeah, or maybe even a Venegar or Fesselink or something. Because there was a thing Larson always said where he started to move when he seen Tosh McKinley put his head down. So it was before Tosh McKinley's moving his legs. As soon as he puts his head down, that's when Larson makes his run. And I think that you can see that happened with Scales and Giakoumakis there. And it was a great ball from Scales. I would actually quite like to see him given a shot ahead of Taylor, because as much as Taylor's reliable, I don't think I've ever seen him put a cross in like that. He can pass well enough, but he can't cross very well, I don't think. I know he put in that good ball last week in the Hibs game, but it's pretty inconsistent with that. And the Abada goal was pretty good, and it was fortunate we got that, because it could have been a real slog in the second half, if not. Obviously, Welsh got caught for their goal, and Postecoglou coming out and admitting that he told the players to just stay out of tackles. Not surprising. And the fact that Barry Ferguson like tried to defend it, like, oh yeah, I'd never send players out to injure another opponent. And then in the same interview, he says, I told them to bite ankles or whatever it was. I can't remember the exact words he said.
Funny thing is, like, I hear he's saying, no, yeah, bite ankles. I was half expecting him to say, you know, go the squirrel, whatever. Like, that's a sort of dodgy thing. If you're going to tell people to go out there, and if you don't win the ball, leave the studs in, smack, like, you know, step on guys' feet, hit their ankles, whatever, what's the next step? Oh, spit on people, kick them in the nuts, smack them in the balls, whatever you want it to be. That's the only escalations left. And then go racial. Like, seriously, it was just ridiculous. For me, that was anti-football at its best. And Barry Ferguson talks copious amounts of shit, and I don't trust the word he says because of who he is.
Well, he chucked himself under the bus as well by saying that. And then the other thing he said was, oh, if I thought any of my players were doing that, they'd be out of the team. Mate, Mohamed Niang gets sent off regularly. He got sent off after 15 seconds in a game. Have you ever pulled him aside and had a word with him? Did you tell any of your players on Sunday to calm down with the tackles? No. It's referee's job, and the referee didn't do that job.
Connor Salmon, he's always been a big bulldozer of a man up front as well, no matter what team he's played for as well. So,
yeah.
You kind of expect that with it between those two. So
he's been sent off for elbows before, Connor Salmon.
Yeah. So you're saying there that, you know, it was that sort of thing. The referee, he didn't call the game. He was hopeless.
Yeah.
100% agree with you. If Rangers can send their letter with their 8-dot points and go to the SFA and get things changed or get things addressed, someone at Celtic has to take the ball and just go and have a chat about it, because I don't want to be whinging about it like sour grapes, whatever, because this isn't it. It's an OH&S issue. If I was in my work and every day there was a chance of something falling on me or something injuring me, it's an OH&S issue.
Mm-hmm.
Players are entitled to feeling safe and know that they're going to, if someone does the wrong thing, then there's going to be repercussions. And that's what the main issue here is. It's got nothing to do with, oh, Rangers get away with this, these guys get away with that, whatever. I don't really want to get into a conspiracy theory on the referees. We've been there before. We all honestly, all openly know how ridiculous they are. And it could be an unconscious bias in that they've grown up with Rangers fans. They've got you know, family who support them, whatever. That's irrelevant in this conversation. For me, the here and now, it's an OH&S issue. If our players are getting assaulted in their workplace, something has to be done. And it's not just us. If one of our players went in late like Niang did, say if Nibiton last night went in late on someone, I'd expect him to be sent off. It's common sense. Like, I don't have these blinkers on. I don't have green tinted glasses on. It's one of them things. I just want our players protected. And I'd expect if our players did the wrong thing, for them to be cop the repercussions too.
Yeah, when a player gets sent off like that, you don't blame the opposition. You don't blame the referee. You blame the player for being an idiot. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a different narrative out of any Celtic fan. Like, that was a if somebody gets a straight red, that was a stupid tackle. And even if you don't think it's worthy of a straight red, you still say it was a stupid tackle because
Bitton as I brought him up because of Michelin.
Yeah, and also when he pulled in Morelos as well. Like, it's regardless of whether you believe it's a red or not, we always look at it and go, well, that could be, you know, I can see how a referee's been given a choice there to give him a red, and it's a stupid tackle to give the referee a choice, you know?
Question is it preventable? Is it avoidable? And is it preventable? If the action is preventable and the action is avoidable, then you've got nothing to go back on and whinge about and complain. Mm-hmm. So referees have got to step their game up. And if that's going to take someone at Celtic going and talking to the SFA and just going and addressing with a list of this has happened in all these games. But if you really want to get something done, go in and say, but then our players have got away with this, 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 and this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Throw yourselves at the mercy of it that way and go, we're not getting these calls, but then we're getting away with these calls. That's unfair on our opponents. This is unfair on us. Can we clean this up across the league? Because do you really think guys are going to want to come to the Scottish League and play there if they're going to be getting kicked and battered around all the time?
Yeah, exactly. We need to improve the quality of the game. That's it. That's why Robbie Keane left. That's why Frimpong left. These guys got the shit kicked out of them. And it took Celtic Twitter about 5 minutes to find three or four previous incidents just from Don Robertson where Celtic players had been maimed and the opposition player hadn't been sent off. There was the one on Tierney. That was one of the worst ones, actually. The Bowman one, Tierney. And there was a Frimpong one. I think there was the Butcher one on Turnbull this year.
Yeah,
and
the
then, and yeah, and then, one. Yeah.
Niang,
and that's just Don Robertson. It's just one referee. And that's just in the last 3 years for Celtic. How many games has he refereed for Celtic in the last? So are these teams scouting the referee and saying, oh, this ref's going to let us leave one on? Juventus scout referees. I don't know if you remember the game where Juventus came to Celtic Park and they were just like full-on rugby tackling at set pieces. And it came out afterwards, they'd scouted the referee and knew that he was going to let the defenders do that. So they did it.
Yeah, the ones where they were standing there, wrapping their hands around guys, but not touching them, leaving a gap of about 2 or 3 inches. So they're not technically touching them, but they're stopping them so they can only step away from the goals to get away from them.
Yeah, I think it was actually worse than that. But yeah, they'd literally scouted the referee. So our team's doing that against us?
Probably.
Yeah. The teams know when a referee's more likely to give a penalty. You can get the stats on this. So
we went through it last week.
Exactly. Like some referees are given a penalty every 7 games, some's every 2.5. You know, so
Robertson every 7 games, and I think it was Madden every 3 games, if my memory was right from last week.
There you go. So go down in the box. Do you mean like it's not rocket science? We worked it out.
Yeah, exactly. And then Andrew's comments after the game, you wanted to discuss them?
Well, it was more the day after when he responded to it was a fan media question, actually, in a press conference. And again, he kind of backed that up where he said, he called out the SFA and said, look, we see videos on this at the start of the year. They show us examples and say, we don't want this to happen. We're going to protect the players. And he's quite right to say, look, there's at least three come straight to mind of that you would put on a video and say, this is not okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, there've been 2 retrospective red cards, I think only 2 against us, for us, you know, whatever. It doesn't benefit us. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I think he's quite right to call it out. We're not getting what we're told we should be getting.
Yep. And one last thing on those things where Andrew's saying there's a bunch of things. Something that I saw on the weekend, and again this morning, our time for the game, the amount of tackles coming through from behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's creeping into the league again. Like, this was a big issue in Ronnie's season,
mm-hmm.
Ronnie's last season, and now I'm seeing it starting to creep back into Scottish football again. And as I said earlier, it's an OH&S issue. It's not going to take much for someone to do a knee or break an ankle or something with people coming through from behind. So it's got to be tidied up.
Yep. How Kit just kept doing it to Jackie Marcus last night until he got booked. And he's just going to keep doing it until I don't give a shit about this whole, you can't book them early because then it ruins the game. Oh, piss off.
The rules are the rules in the first second or in the last second of stoppage time. Who cares when the call is? If someone comes off kickoff and just runs through like a battering ram straight through players, they deserve a card.
Yeah.
If, what are you saying? Morelos in the derby can run out and just, he's not going to be playing, but come through with the elbow up and just run through people early and be like, oh, I'm going to get away with it because it's in the first 40 seconds of the game. No.
I remember Barry Robson did that in a derby game against Rangers. Do you remember when he elbowed Christian Daly in the first minute of the game? And that's the kind of backward refereeing we had and still have. Like, it's not good.
Yep. And then we had the game this morning, 2-1 win against Hearts. I'll go through the lineups because we had a little chat now, group chat about you thought what the midfield would be. Mm-hmm. I said it'd be Bitton, Hatate and O'Reilly. So I got that one, Sean. There we go.
You called it, yeah.
And we're going to talk about, I want to touch on the old O'Reilly thing for the, his signing, first of all. Mm-hmm. Like, we got him for a pittance. What was it, $1.5 million?
Mm-hmm.
And coming from, he was originally from Fulham, took a pay cut, everyone knows, went to MK Dons for a year, got his move to us. He's, everyone that you see online talking about him from either Fulham or from MK Dons were raving about him. Then you do the usual research, you watch the highlight clips, whatever, and you're like, okay, there's a player there. And to see him go out there last night on debut, win man of the match, 8 key passes, an assist. I think there's not just, I'm going to say there's a player there. That is an absolute bargain.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple fact that he brings something on top of all that I just spoke about that we don't have at the club. Now, he brings someone who can beat the first man on a corner. Yes, mm-hmm. He hit a few quite long, looked to the back post, and they went a little long. But if you put a 6'7" Julian in there eventually making those runs at the back post, I'm like, this is quite appetizing. I think it's going to be an interesting one for us. So, yeah, I'm looking at that going, here's a guy that would have loved to have had like Julian and I as his centre-back pairing, putting those balls into the back post. Carter Vickers is good in the air. Starfelt, not so much. But you get Julian there making those runs to the back post that he used to do all the time before he got hurt once he's back playing. And you got that ball coming in from the corner. Who has been taking corners for us all season?
Turnbull.
Turnbull. And who else? Rogic took a few. That's about it.
Jota took one last night, but that was
Jota took one. I think Juranovic has taken one.
Juranovic, that's who it's been recently, Juranovic.
And Juranovic is good, don't get me wrong. But O'Reilly, that's what we need. Because my concern is if you have Juranovic taking a corner, and it's on the other side of the field to where he's supposed to be defending, he's a mile out of position if they mm-hmm. get win the ball and they counter. So yeah. I'd rather have someone like O'Reilly there taking corners. So, yeah. Happy with that. Let's. I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but let's see how he goes. But yeah, overall, I'll throw to you for your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on Matt O'Reilly before I move on. Yeah, we do. And what you were saying about Juranovic as well is we do traditionally leave one or two fullbacks defending at the corners because the centre backs go up. So usually it used to be Kieran Tierney was always the last man at these kind of corners. So you're right, if Juranovic is up there, that's kind of Yeah, it used to be Tierney and Forrest. So Tierney would be deepest and Forrest would be second deepest. And then, so I'm guessing Taylor's doing the Tierney role. So, yeah, I'm not sure about Juranovic's position there. It's hard to pick it up on the TV camera. But when O'Reilly went to take that first corner, I was like, oh, okay, this will be interesting. And then he absolutely nailed it. Like, that was one of the best corners. I don't know. See if somebody just got an end of it. Like, I don't know. It's certain goal. Keeper couldn't get it. Right in the 6 yard box of pace. All you had to do is get a touch on it. It was like taking like a sober Alan Thompson. That's what it reminded me of. Or even a fit Lee Griffiths. Two exceedingly rare specimens. So hopefully Matt O'Reilly can do it. I think, as you said, he's going to be very career driven by the looks of it. And he does look a player. So him and Hitati look like we might just have them for 18 months and then on to Southampton or whoever to prove themselves before they try and get a move to Liverpool.
O'Reilly was already linked with Dortmund when he was leaving Fulham. That's right. So Chelsea. They're already scouting him. So could be interesting.
Yeah, exactly. But the midfield three were pretty good last night. And that's funny because like the first 10 minutes in, I sent a message to my dad and my brother saying like, oh, Hitati has been really poor. And he had the first 10 minutes, he gave the ball away four times in a row, just gave away easy possession. And then once I sent that message, he did nothing wrong for the rest of the game. He was perfect for the remainder of the game. Some great balls.
Same thing, Sean. That's what's funny. Like, I was watching the first 10 and I'm like, what's he doing? Yeah. And then he gets the ball and he's got someone right on his hip and he just makes a really sharp turn back to the middle of the pitch, pushes past someone, and from that point onwards, when he beat that man in close, it was just like, all right, he's up and about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was the atmosphere or something, but yeah, it just took him 10 minutes to get screwed into the game. Bitton was good for the first hour. I thought he dropped off after he got a yellow card. He didn't really, you know, he gave away that penalty. And I hated that last half hour. Even though we were 2-0 up, I didn't really feel comfortable, like, because Hearts were just chucking balls into the box and you felt like something like that was going to happen. And then and then you thought it was going to happen again. Like, every time the ball went in, it was just pinball. And it's like, because of the camera angles, like, oh my God, is that a handball? I can't tell. Do you know what I mean? It was really nervy. And then again, when they had the penalty, it was a stonewall penalty. But
yeah. I just want to go back a couple of steps before we discuss the penalty, Sean.
Yeah.
Because we've just skimmed over it. Hitati's goal.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a belter, wasn't it?
I can't believe the speed he got into that shot and the control. It was just insane. And then Giakoumakis to make his run and to basically backheel the goal while getting tackled and taken down. Like, good quality finish. Again, as you said, making that run. Making that quick run and getting there. So he's showing a bit now. And then on top of that, you look at that, all that sort of stuff. And then I'm like, first half, I was like, yeah, we're 2-0 up. Could have been 4 up, 3 or 4 easily. Ah, happy days. We carry on the same way. The talk of Giakoumakis being offside for his goal, touch and go. I think he's onside.
If it's VAR, he's off.
Yeah.
It was
touch and go. Like, you look at it to the naked eye, you got to go right back. Okay, freeze, down to the foot. Mm-hmm. Which foot's grounded, which foot's up? And for me, looking at it, when the cross was hit, his front foot was up, but his back foot was down, which is what possibly, to me, I thought he was onside for that reason. But VAR would have fixed that real quick.
Yeah.
Their goal, VAR, it was clearly offside.
Yeah.
But I clearly would have been offside with VAR, but it's the same touch. Linesman making the same call, and we got away with one. They got away with one. I can't complain about that.
Well, did you hear what Robbie Nielsen said?
Oh, he's an idiot.
No, he came out and said he straight up said we probably got that goal because I spoke to the officials at halftime about the Celtic goal.
At least he's honest about it.
So he's like, just straight up coming out and stating in public, I am influencing officials. And officials are under my influence in making decisions that are not objective.
Yeah, well, he walked up the tunnel with the refs at halftime having a crack about Giakoumakis being offside.
Yeah.
And then we get to the penalty. And I'm watching it. I had the weirdest way of watching this game this morning. I'll just tell you now. We had real bad thunderstorms here. My dog, he's got anxiety. I was at my garage watching the game on my phone with him, celebrating, going, yeah, like this, and my dog's just panting away like a lunatic. Wish I had a big screen. But when they took that penalty, Hart goes the wrong way, hits the post, rolls behind him. Normally, if it hits the post and comes back, it hits the keeper and goes back in. So how that hit the post, curled, missed him, and went out for a goal kick, I was just like, yes, like this. In the, like, it was as good as scoring a goal that happened. And my dog's just like, huh? And just looked at me like, are you all right, you psycho? It's good fun.
Yeah, like, we're always guaranteed entertainment at Tynecastle. You don't always win, but, I mean, these games are always going to be televised games. Like, I can't think of a boring one. Even if you're talking about, like, the one where we lost 4-0 after going 69 games undefeated or whatever it was.
Yep.
Like, obviously not great for us, but that's, you know, quality television, right? They showed the two games at halftime, the 3-2 one with Steve McManus, and the one with Edward, last-minute goal. And then, obviously, the one earlier in this season was the John Souter last-minute goal. So these games are always entertaining at Tynecastle. It's always a contest, you know.
Yeah.
Even when, I think, did we not beat them 5 or 6-0 one time? That was great as well.
Put a lot of pump in the old jam tarts.
Yeah. But did you see as well, I don't know if you've seen the tweet, the Jota's reaction to Hatate's goal?
Oh, brilliant.
So if you watch it, when Hatate shoots and then if you see the wide-angle replay, Jota's like, hands in the head in disbelief. And another funny thing as well, when you slow it down, the replay, it looks like Craig Gordon kind of looks at Barkas as if, like, do you mean, oh, how did you not get your hand to that? It's right close to you. But then, like, when you watch it at full speed, it's just like a human being just can't react that fast. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just the pace of it.
He had his hands there, but I think he didn't think the ball was moving that quick.
Yeah, and look, it moved in the air as well. Like, it was almost like a kind of Nakamura one.
Do you see the side-by-side of that? Nakamura's one where the ball swings and goes in. And that the side-by-side, they hit the ball at the exact same time. It goes in there at the same time. Keeper does the exact same thing, goes through their fingers the same way. Mm. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And
He's a Hatate, mate.
Well, look, we can still we compare Giakoumakis to Larsson, so we can compare Hatate to Nakamura if we want. We're just talking about specific things. So far, I've compared Giakoumakis to Larsson, Matt O'Reilly to Alan Thompson, and Hatate to Nakamura. It's quite a comparison show.
You tell who you grew up watching, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it was a good game.
Neil team onwards.
Yeah. It was a good game. I did enjoy it, even though it was nervy. Like, I was sitting, like, counting down the seconds at the end. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but those are the games that, yeah, they're nervy and they're hard to watch. But at the same time, I love watching those games in a way because these are the games that build character, especially with a bunch of new players coming in, having to get used to a new league, new manager, what their expectations are. They may already be match fit. They think they are, but they're not Ange match fit. So they're getting their fitness up as well. Guys coming back from injury and putting it all together. Like, I look at that and go, this is so exciting. And there's only room to go because you look at who was out. No Rogic, no Maeda, no Kyogo. Who else am I missing? No Turnbull.
McGregor, Turnbull.
No McGregor. There you go. So you look at it and go, we've got so much depth up front. Yet, that could be a front five.
The problem with the injuries isn't that there's six of them. The problem is that they were all within two positions. So it was four centre mids and two centre forwards. So that's where it becomes a problem. And the fact that our three centre mids were the best players on the pitch and Giakoumakis had a good game. So they were starting to look like we might... Well not. We now have the depth, but... If those players don't come back from injury soon, then we might end up in a vicious cycle where the ones that are now in are getting burned out.
Well, the thing as well in that McCarthy and Soro having to come on late in the game, yes, it's great for tactically to get them in and shore up a result, but I'd much rather have, if O'Reilly's playing like that and then suddenly be like, oh, you've played 70 minutes, well done on debut. Now look at these tired defenders for Hearts and let's put Tom Rogic to run at them. well, let's put Maeda in to run at him. Or Kyogo goes on.
Yeah.
And you look at that, and that's the sort of thing where you look at it and go, dude, it's going to cause some chaos. We're going to pump a team one day once we get a full squad. When that happens. Now, the other thing I want to touch on from the game, and I know you're not a big fan of, is Starfelt. I want to talk about him. I want to talk about Carter Vickers. And the reason I want to talk about them is watching a game like that, I barely noticed either of them on the pitch. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, it's probably a good thing in terms of there's no massive obvious errors, but there was a couple of wobbles there where Carter Vickers was out of position at one point, Starfelt's covered him. There's another time where Starfelt's stuffed up wrong side and Carter Vickers has covered him. So there's a good partnership there. And where we, early on in the piece, we're like, oh, this guy made a mistake, this guy made a mistake, and you're pointing the finger. Now you don't know. Like, I didn't notice the mistakes until, like, when I saw replays of things going, oh, Starfelt's in the wrong position. But then you look and go, Carter Vickers has covered that. Cool. No worries. So it's like, it's good to see that they've built that relationship now and partnership that they're covering for each other before I even spot it.
Yeah, there was an interview with Starfelt last week or 2 weeks ago, and he was pointing out that they have these conversations very regularly at the moment, where they talk about different situations and where when one person does this, what's the other person going to do? So apparently they're having these conversations, like, I don't know if it means on the sidelines or on the training pitch or whatever, but apparently it's not just a playing by instinct. They are talking about it and as planned. I wasn't sure if you're going to bring up the Starfelt thing, because like first half, I thought he was a bit shaky because we were playing, he had possession a lot and he does that thing where he can't pass with his left, doesn't touch the ball with his left foot. But I had actually, I'll just show you the evidence. I'd actually said that I would reluctantly give Starfelt man of the match based on the second half. So I did actually recognise that he was very good last night, and he was good previous against Hibs as well. So he's had, was it Hibs? Yeah, it was. So he's had two good games to start this year. I still don't like that he can't pass the ball, but he must be feeling Julian behind him and lifting his game.
Exactly. That's what I think it is more than anything. Now Julian's back. Welsh is nipping at his heels as well for a game. So you've got some guys there who are putting pressure on him and Carter Vickers for their starting jerseys. So internal competition, the old saying is iron sharpens iron. If you've got that competition going and people pushing you all the time, it's going to make you raise your game or you fall by the wayside. And the one example I always point back to is, when did James Forrest play his best football? When he had Paddy Roberts nipping at his heels and vice versa. So that's the sort of thing we're seeing now, I think, with Starfelt. He's settled in. He's had 6 months at the club. He's built a partnership with Carter Vickers, and he's got competition pushing for his spot. So now he has to step it up. So it's good to see.
Yeah. Still, we'd love to have a left-footed one, but yeah, we'll take it for now.
I think we do. His name's Scales.
Well, he's staking a claim as a left-back at the moment. So.
Yeah, I know. I think what will happen with Scales long-term, he'll be the left-sided centre-back. He'll come in. That's ideally. And what will happen is we'll go and recruit, as I said, going into next season, we get into Champions League, we need to recruit a starting quality European level left back. And then we're good to go. That's the way I look at it defensively. So Scales can help do the job now. Going into next season, I want him in the centre back rotation, and I want a starting level left back with Taylor as his backup. In the same way we've got a starting quality right back in Juranovic with Ralston as his backup. So, on to the next thing. It's going to be a little sad. RIP Wim Jansen. So, for me, Wim Jansen, I'll tell you a little story. I told you off air, Sean, but for the listeners, for me growing up over here in Australia, it was hard watching Celtic. The way it was back in the day, we had the supporters club in Melbourne who'd get tapes sent over once a month. We'd get together and we'd watch the last month's worth of games over 2 or 3 days. So you go in on a Friday or you go in on a Saturday, watch two games, go in on a Sunday, do that and catch up. And that was how we watched our games. So growing up, watching Celtic in the 90s wasn't a very successful period, as pretty much everyone is aware. So for me, Wim Jansen is the first manager I can remember seeing lead us to winning a title. I can remember there was other times when I was real little, but this is the first one where I was going and watching those games every month and us stopping Rangers run at the 10 and that season. And that means a lot to me. That's one of those things that I can't really put into words what he means to me, because I never met the guy. I never saw his team play live. Never been in the same building as him to breathe the same oxygen sort of thing. But that and the memories I've got of going to those to that CSC once a month to just watch these games and he's at the helm and us winning the title, something I'm going to cherish forever as a Celtic fan. So RIP with him. Condolences to you and your family and to anyone who knew him. You're in our thoughts.
Yeah, and look, he had a good relationship with the Celtic fans, obviously. Apparently when he came in, he said right at the outset, I'm here just to do 1 year. And I think it was Jock Brown, or I can't remember if it was he, I can't remember if he was there at the time or not. Instead of Jock Brown or Fergus McCann said, just kind of laughed, like, no, once, yeah, you'll change your mind once you kind of get to see the place. And now he stuck to what he did, but no Celtic fan, every Celtic fan was so grateful to what he did, you know. They didn't burn any cardboard effigies of him when he left. And it was quite a coup to get someone like Wim Jansen. Like, he played in two World Cup finals and he didn't mind flexing it, apparently. Apparently he would do it quite regularly in the dressing room. When a player spoke up, he'd just be like, how many World Cup finals have you played in? It's kind of the equivalent of, like, I don't know, someone like Didier Deschamps coming now to Celtic. It wouldn't really, it was a big high profile player, even though I was too young to kind of recognise it at the time. And as you said, there was that big gap in our growing up where it was just total Rangers dominance. I would have been one, just about to turn two, when we won the title in 1988. And then, obviously I don't remember that. So then there's this big gap until 1997-98 season. And we obviously had that bad start. We lost the first two games. Everyone thinks Henrik Larsson's a dud. And he managed to turn it around. Talking about how he was just playing simple 4-4-2 football. Just win games 1 or 2-0, doesn't matter. About attacking flair, very different from Tommy Burns that came before him. Very antithetic to that. But Tommy Burns didn't give us a title, and Wim Jansen did. You could say the standard of opposition factors into that. Fine, maybe, yeah. But he'll never... He's not going to get a statue. You don't get a statue when you're there for 1 year. You don't, you know, Scott Brown will get a statue first, or Fergus McCann. But there should be something to recognise him. I don't know what. Something a bit smaller scale. Maybe just a portrait somewhere, something like that.
Yeah, well, one other thing I want to touch on with him is, I'm just going to, this may seem like I'm going on a little tangent here, but every manager I can remember in my lifetime up until this season has been Celtic-minded, has had some sort of link to the club, whether they're a Celtic fan or they played at the club or whatever. Wim Jansen was the first person without that link. And he did come in, and in that season, going for to try and stop the 10, you hear a lot of people say that that's what we needed because it took the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at this season, and it's the second time in my life a non-Celtic-minded person has come into the club as manager, and now it's basically the other equivalent of a run at the 10 has been stopped, and now we've gone for someone who's not Celtic-minded and he's building it up in Ange. So It's just, I think it's kind of strange, like, that in my, 39 years on the planet, two seasons there's been a non-Celtic-minded manager in the dugout. The year Wim was there, and the current year with Ange.
Dr. Joe and John Barnes as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Dr. Joe, but yeah. John Barnes, I'm not counting because he had Del Gleish next to him pretty much the whole time.
True.
So I'm not going to count that because it was his first job, but who did he have assisting / director of football overlooking it and telling him what to do? He had Del Gleish there, so let's rule Barnes out. I'm not counting that. So realistically, and he ended up in the dugout anyway, Del Gleish, so that season when Barnes got the chop. So, yeah, okay. Dr. Joe was the other one. But still, it's, RIP. And thanks for everything you did for Celtic.
Another story that came out on whatever radio show it was I listened to, apparently he'd illegally tapped up Paul Lambert while he was on Scotland international duty to sign for Celtic. That was an interesting one as well. So apparently he wasn't above some of the darker arts as well. So yeah, quite a character. Yeah, sad loss.
Who doesn't do that anyway?
Exactly.
That's what international football is for.
That's it. Get your mates in.
All right. So a couple of little things to touch on before we preview the upcoming game on the weekend. So saw an article, read it, didn't really give too much thought, but I know we've discussed it previously when we're talking about alcohol and gambling sponsors on shirts. And the article was that selling alcohol has been approved for sale at Ibrox going forward. My thoughts, we do it over here, no real issues. I don't know what the lay of the land is like over in Scotland for that. However, doing it at Ibrox first, like they need any more excuses to just lose their minds and sing ridiculous songs and then they can blame it on the alcohol. So I don't know. What's your thought, Sean?
Well, was it Ibrox for Sevco match days or was it Ibrox for other events?
I think it was match days.
That's interesting because I thought it was banned.
I can find the article again quickly. Well,
yeah. But it was banned in 1980 after the Scottish Cup final between Celtic and Rangers. And that actually came up on my Twitter recently, a video of that with the horses on the pitch and like kids sitting in the goals crying and stuff. I don't know why that kid was on the pitch, to be honest. But either way, it wasn't a good look and that was why they banned it. You can still get a drink at the game, but you have to pay for some of the fancy seats. The last time I went to a Celtic game, 3 years ago, something like that, we paid for like the cushion seats in the West Stand. Hold on. So, whatever the one to the left of the main stand is. And you can go in before the game and at halftime and get a pint. And if you're in a restaurant, it's all you can drink as well before and halftime. So there is alcohol, but yeah, not for the riffraff outside. In England, they're allowed to have it, but you're not allowed to have it in your seat. So you can go to the concourse and have some.
There you go. So it was Rangers have secured permission to sell alcohol in the event space at the new Edmondson House.
Okay.
This will be sold in the family-friendly hospitality space on the ground floor on match days and during functions, including weddings and live gigs.
Okay.
And then it says that they're also looking to try and do it wider range through the stadium in the future.
Yeah. So it's basically hospitality, which is what Celtic have as well. And I think most clubs have that. I'm assuming that's an exemption because I worked at Park at Thistle and St. Mirren and they're the same. If you're in the hospitality, you can drink alcohol. And I don't see any reason why we can't. I think the culture's changed enough in the last 42 years that we could move towards having like mid-strength lagers for sale to the general attendees. I don't see why not. You know, that's going to be a good money earner. It's going to get some people more engaged. I think it just makes sense to do that, to be honest with you.
We'll say the flow on of that, Sean, if you're selling them at the game,
mm-hmm.
It also has the flow on around the local area. If you've got other people with pubs around there, you're not going to have them going to the boozer before the game, just smashing as many beers as possible and going to the stadium.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have the trouble before the game. And if people want to make a day of it, if you've got a midday kickoff or a 3 p.m. kickoff, you may look at it and go, all right, let's go to the football and let's find a pub, have a few more drinks, get a meal, and then go out in town later on that night. So you can make a day of it, including going to the football. You don't have to just be like, okay, get a bus, smash all my cans on the bus on the way to the stadium, and then walk in pissed off my ass or whatever. So there's a way around it.
Yeah, and that's what we did. Perth Glory have had one home game this year because of the COVID thing, and that's what we did. We went to sports bar, a couple of drinks and foods, went to the Glory game, had a few mid-strengths there, out to the pub after. Yeah, you always end up at karaoke or casino or something. If you're still
the old mid-strength madness. I gotta love it.
Yeah, look, it just ticks you over. You don't get pissed on the mid-strength. Do you know what I mean? Like, the idea is that people drive and have a couple of them.
It's that hot in Perth anyway. You sweat it out before it gets into the liver anyway. So you're all good.
Yeah. No, it's definitely good to have a... And if I go to a Dockers game, that's like... obviously
all bits are off at the AFL.
Yeah, well, people wouldn't really know the Aussie rules kind of thing, but usually I have three of those because there's four quarters. And the only reason I don't crack onto a fourth is just because I'll be driving by the time I get the bus back to the halfway home.
When I fall, I've shown.
Yeah, because it's a half hour per quarter and 5 minute breaks, 10 minute breaks in between, so you can fair crack through a few of them in the heat.
Yeah. Now there's another story, Sean. And I thought, when I saw this, I'm like, Sean will be heartbroken. Barkas's move to Sheffield United has broken down because apparently we wanted too much. So he's going to go there on loan with an option to buy or an obligation to buy at £2.5 million. And then, so we're taking a loss anyway. But then they didn't want to cover his full wage and we wanted a percentage of his next sale. And that's where it broke down, over the percentage of next sale and covering wages. Unlucky. Cabbage hands is still at the club. What was your take?
Well, when I seen the news that he was on a train heading somewhere, did you see the tweet on the road where he was holding up, I'm assuming it was his baby, and all of the replies to the tweet were like, I'm surprised you've not dropped that baby yet, or stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, or how did you manage to catch the train? All that sort of stuff. It was absolute comedy. But I was like so excited. I was like, yes, he's on his way. But sadly, not to be. Michael Nixon must have some other irons in the fire that he thinks he can play hardball on someone who's third choice. And the other thing I was surprised to read was the reported 20,000 a week salary, which is very contrary to reports from a year and a half ago, which he was on 6,000 a week. So I don't know, like, where's the truth?
I thought he was on 15, Sean. I heard he was on 6 at AEK Athens, and then we've come in with a massive, like, almost 2.5 times his wage, so we're paying him 15. That's what I thought he was on.
Yeah, 20 sounded too much. That didn't sound right to me.
Yeah. Maybe he should get, you know what they should do? 15, 5 grand clean sheet bonus. He might actually want to catch the ball then.
His kid will go hungry.
Apparently there's a couple of clubs up in Scandinavia looking at him. I think Rosenberg was looking at him, or and then the team over in Sweden as well. So yeah.
Well, we're not going to get money from there, so that would be a loan to prove himself rather than a loan to buy.
Go over there, play some games, get your value up, and then sell him in the summer. Unfortunate. All right. On the weekend, we're playing Dundee United. Is that at our joint or at Tanados?
It's at home.
Oh, there we go. Oh, yeah, happy days. 2 a.m. Sunday. So I think I'll be doing the old...
2 a.m.? What the...
For Melbourne, yeah.
Was that a late game?
It's a 3 p.m. kickoff.
Oh, it's 3 p.m., right, okay.
So 2 a.m. in Melbourne because we're 11 hours different. So, yeah, that'll be don't look at your phone, wake up early before work and watch the game.
That's 11 p.m. for me, so I'll probably stay up. I'll be pretty tired, but I'll manage. Yeah.
I'll put my my phone on do not disturb so I don't even see any notifications in our group chat if you boys are talking about the game. Perfect.
Whereas I'll send a message and I'll see if no. So last night when I sent one and nobody read it, I was like, ah, these guys are all asleep or busy with work or whatever.
I was watching the game on my phone, so that's why.
All right, okay. So think get a notification.
I was like, go away, Sean, get your notifications away. I want to see the game.
Yeah. And no, there could be a time thing as well. Yeah. So yeah.
Ah, all good. But yeah, we had got Dundee United. They're currently seventh in the league. We're still 4 points behind Rangers. What are you hoping to see in the game other than a win? Are you thinking, what are you thinking, predicted lineup?
I think it'll be similar, mainly because we don't have too many personnel to change it. I think there will be a couple of changes, but not too many. I'd say Jota is going to start again. I think Abada might come in for Forrest because Forrest played like almost 90 minutes last night.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. Did he? No, he didn't. Forrest did. Forrest played the 97 minutes.
Forrest played the whole game.
Yeah, so he'll be out and Abada will be in. Jack and Mackes will have to start again. Midfield three, the only possible change would be McCarthy or Soro. Maybe McCarthy comes in. Hitati might be gubbed after playing 89 minutes and not playing for a month before that because of the shutdown in Japan. Defence, possible that Ralston comes in, but other than that, not. I don't see any other changes. I think Dundee United have just snapped a crazy losing streak. Am I wrong on that? They won last night 2-1. I think it was Tony Watt's first game for them. And he got the assists for the winning goal. So that should be interesting. That's a revenge game for Tony Watt. But yeah, I think, yeah, look at that. So they beat Kilmarnock in the cup. So before the weekend, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 losses in a row in the league. And if you count back even further, it's 8 out of 10 losses or 1 win out of 11 games before that. So they were on a pretty shocking run of form. And then Tony Watts came in. Yeah, well, they're still, even if you look at those losses, they're still not, other than us beating them 3-0. They're not too conceding too many goals. But I heard Charlie McGrew is a doubt, and I'd need to look into that in more detail. So,
yeah.
Could be a couple of excels in there.
Yep. It'd be interesting. Yeah, for me, I think any obvious one would be Abada starts instead of Forrest. That was it. I'd keep the lineup how it was.
Mm-hmm.
Go there and, yeah, Giacomacca's hat trick. There you go. We'll win 3-0.
You stick it on, hat trick? No, like he's one of those players. Like, what they take John Hartson 10 games or something to get his first goal. Like, takes the bigger boys a bit more time to get out to pace.
I think he's had two straight games where he's scoring, so it's time to, you know, now he's had a run of games. Let's go. You said Mulgrew's out, so I'm like, there's a tall centre back out for him. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's catching up on Ralston and the goal scoring charts.
Brilliant. What's your score prediction?
Yeah, well, I'd said before as well, like these three league fixtures, the Hearts, Dundee United and Sevco ones, the corresponding previous games had us in 1 point out of 9. So we've already bettered that by beating Hearts at Tynecastle. So we're 3 points already. So I'm confident we'll get this. Well, I don't want to say confident, but I strongly believe we'll get the 3 points. I'm never confident. And yeah, I don't think it'll be... I'm going to say 2-0. I think 2-0. I think it'll be kind of like the Hibs game. I think it'll be more like that. We're Dundee United will get a couple of half chances, but we'll probably step it up when we need to and get the goals and then kind of cruise out the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. Everyone, my dog's just walked into the building, so if you hear panting, that's what's going on. All right. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, 3 points is the main objective there. Other than that, we'll, as we said early on, next week our pod is going to be live. We'll do a live pod on Wednesday, I think probably Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll figure that out and put it up on the socials when we're doing it. Preview the Glasgow Derby. Other than that, Sean, what's your final thought for the week?
My final thought is don't waste your time going to see The Matrix 4. It is balls. I was going to say a sweary word there. It's not a good film. I did not enjoy it. Don't waste your time.
For me, Bob Melkin is a knob. That is all.
Yeah.
But we already knew that.
Hey, look, right, we got everyone through the whole podcast without mentioning Jonathan Afolabi once. Oh, yeah.
Leo Connor as well, gone.
Oh, yeah. Never seen him play a game. Anyway.
That is what it is. So, yeah, just everyone on Facebook, please give our page a like. Join our group. Instagram and Twitter, you can find us at Celtic Down. YouTube channel, Celtic Down Under. Website, www.celticdownunder.com. Had a good chat, Sean. And, let's see how we go on the weekend. Another 3 points is absolute must for the team going into the derby. So, until then, hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.